The Feast of Corpus Christi brings to conclusion the major journey from Easter into the entry of ordinary time. Holy Trinity last week, then Pentecost before that. And this Friday, the Church will celebrate the Feast of the Sacred Heart. So we have done all of the major feasts of our Lord, his Passion, Death and Resurrection, celebrating the resurrection particularly, and moving into the birth of the Church. This church here is actually called Sacred Heart in the parish of Mary, Help of Christians, but the church is Sacred Heart, so we'll be having that feast day. Actually, it'll be celebrated partly on Thursday with the school as well, because on Friday we have the confirmation day. This time next weekend, you're going to be surrounded by Year 6 students and their families who are preparing for confirmation here in the church next Saturday night and 10 o'clock Mass Sunday. Now, if you look at Luke's Gospel tonight and you hear the story of the feeding of the 5,000, you'll say, oh, yeah, yeah. And some of you might notice that the little boy never got mentioned. That's in Mark's Gospel. The little boy who brought forward the loaves and the fish. So when you look at the Gospel accounts of the feeding of the 5,000, we'll call it, or the miracle of the loaves and the fish, it's different in each of the Gospels. So don't get caught up with the numbers or with the figures or what's going on where. Luke and the other Gospel writers write their Gospel with a specific intention in mind, and they manipulate, in a positive way, and give emphasis to the elements and to the figures, the numbers, to drive home the point. Now, by this stage, when Luke wrote his Gospel, the Eucharist, as we know it, was being celebrated in its nearly complete form, ritually. So they came together on the Sabbath, they read the Psalms and they read the Scriptures, they broke the bread, and then they gave the leftover bread, they took it to the community, to those that couldn't be there. And then they had a collection type affair where they could look after the poor and the needy. Looking at where this miracle took place, and it was said to be at Bethsaida. Bethsaida is a particularly deserted sort of place. It's in the middle of nowhere, really, up the northern end of Galilee. So I had a little look around there and I thought, okay, what's all this about? And there's at least six things that I think highlight Luke's intention. Why did Luke write the gospel, this miracle, this way? The first thing is, I think that we need to remember that Luke is giving the definite evidence that Jesus Christ is the beginning of the new Israel. His passion, death and resurrection gives birth to the church, the new Israel. In order to plug that into his audience, he then needs to use language and symbols that they will get because they are part of the old Israel. Remember, I have said before that the law finished, the old law of Moses finished with the new law of Jesus Christ himself, love of God, love of neighbour. How is that to happen? That's exactly what this miracle is about, this miracle story is about. So if we just have a look at it, the elements that I'm talking about that help relate. Firstly, the 12 came to this place. The 12 represents the 12 tribes of Israel. So the audience in Luke's time would have thought, yep, this is us, this is our history. The 12 tribes of Israel. And then they come to this deserted place. The audience would have then recalled that the 12 tribes of Israel left Egypt and they went through the desert, that deserted place. So Luke is very specifically connecting this event with the old Israel. He then says that there are about 5,000. Now, 5,000 people in Bethsaida at that particular time would not have been possible. The largest city in Palestine at that time was certainly Jerusalem. The next large city after that would have been Caesarea Philippi, which is on Caesarea Maritima, rather, which is on the coast where King Herod had his summer palace. And both of those places would have had over 10,000 people in them. That's what defined a city in those days. So Bethsaida would have been closer to a village or a town, which meant that it probably had hundreds rather than thousands living there. So 5,000 people in this place would be a huge crowd. The 5,000 represent the tribe of Israel gone to this deserted place. The 12 tribes of Israel gone to this deserted place. We're halfway through the miracle. Next thing he says is sit them down in groups of 50. Now, I'm not just playing with numbers here, but this is what Luke does. Sets them down in groups, says to Jesus, tells them to sit down in groups of 50. 50 in the Jewish culture is the Jubilee year. In the Jubilee year, nothing is planted. It's a year when the ground, the areas that are farmed, are all given to rest. It is the year that all debts are given over. So it's a good year to be around. Don't know what the interest rates were like, but the Jubilee year is hugely important. So he's got the tribes of Israel sitting down and celebrating a Jubilee year in their bunch. That's where the 50 is gone. That would have been the first thing that entered the head of Luke's audience. The next thing he says is, they have only 5 loaves and these 2 fish. You bring the 2 together, the 5 and the 2, and you've got 7. His audience would have known that the 7 was always an allusion to creation, the story of creation, the foundation of the world, God breathing his spirit into the world. Always, number 7 is to do with creation. And then we finish the miracle with the 12 baskets left over. And it is the 12 baskets that represent the new Israel. So we have the breaking of the bread in exactly the same language that Luke uses when he gives us the Last Supper narrative. Took the bread and said the blessing. He broke it and gave it to his disciples. You'll hear me say that in about 15 minutes. Right there and then, it's the same words. And Luke has put those same consecration words into this miracle because it is the source and summit of the new Israel, which we would call the church. And you are the descendants of the apostles. You are the ones that are being fed. So think about our role and responsibility as the church. What is my role and responsibility? And if you think, oh, look, I'm nearing retirement or whatever, I've done my bit, well, think again, because I'm going to give you some more figures now. Some of you will have heard during the week from the United Nations that there are now 70 million people in the world who are considered displaced and refugees. 70 million. And that would not be including places like Venezuela. Because the people of Venezuela are leaving, I understand, about 5 million have left, but they are not registered anywhere as refugees. So that's 5 million more that you could add on. So that would be quite an underestimate, 70 million. This is the end of Refugee Week internationally. That's a horrendous amount of people on the move trying to find feed and water. They're hungry and they're poor, most of them. And I look at the statistics, and I went over this again before I came back down to the church this afternoon. So there are, according to my accounts here, the world population is about 7.7 billion as we sit here tonight, thereabouts, 7.7 billion. There are 795 million people who will go hungry this night. That makes 1 in 9. So if I look around here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, sorry, no dinner for you, Matt. That's what I look at. 1 in 9 people will go hungry tonight in the world. 3.1 million of them will die because they're under 5 years of age. So you can take the figures, the numbers that are in the miracle of the loaves and the fish, and you can work them whichever way you like. You can take the numbers, the figures that I've just given you then about hunger in the world. But the Feast of Corpus Christi is truly about taking what we experience and making this church alive, introducing to a world which starves its own introduced to the world, he who was blessed, broken, and given. It's not so much about the loaves and the fish, it's Jesus who was given. And we do that by our presence, or we don't do it by our absence. And when we do it by our presence, we should do it with our arms full, with whatever we can, to change those figures of the hungry in the world. It's particularly pertinent in Refugee Week, and it's particularly pertinent and relevant when we think of Corpus Christi, the Feast of the Body and Blood of Christ. 1/3 of all food that is produced, my understanding is wasted. 1/3 is wasted. And we have that many people starving. We are not starving spiritually, and I don't think anybody here is starving physically. But we need to let those figures sit with us on this feast day. And we need to make a resolution of some kind. What can I do to make a difference? Or ask ourselves, what can we do to make a difference? On my own, it's pretty tough. Collectively, we can change the world. We can feed the world.